This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. On the first part of our show, we heard from two organizers of the Million Man March's Philadelphia contingent. They're hoping that 1 million African-American men will gather in Washington, D.C. for a day of atonement and recommitment to family and community, and to send a message about the economic and social predicament of African-American men. Glenn Lowry has reservations about the march. Lowry's essays on race and responsibility in America are collected in the book One by One, From the Inside Out. He's a professor of economics at Boston University. I asked him his general impressions of the march.
Well, I think the march is a significant event. A million or even a quarter of a million black men coming together cannot be, dismissed, looked upon lightly. I think the march is two things. It's a communal event and it's a political event. As a communal event, it's black men looking into the depths of our souls, atoning, praying, trying to reconstruct and resurrect and all of that. I think that's very powerful, and that accounts for why it is that the idea of this march has, struck the imaginations of so many people. However, as a political event, I think that it's problematic for me, deeply problematic, particularly against the backdrop of the troubled race relations and the increasing conservatism of the American polity. I want to think that the only way we can really make progress in this country is blacks and whites working together on our problems. And I do have grave misgivings about Minister Farrakhan as a figure to be likened with Martin Luther King, someone who represents blacks in a leadership position to the rest of the nation.
What is the symbolic value to you of making Monday a day of atonement for African-American men?
Well, there is something to be atoned for. I think that there is no escaping the conclusion that we have failed. To say we African-American men have failed in our responsibilities before God and must now bend our knees and ask his forgiveness, this is tremendously powerful because it is true and because it taps a certain spiritual longing, which I believe is in every human heart and is certainly nevertheless still powerful in the black American men's, consciousness. There's no doubt that there's something there. I think it's very important.
Now, you mentioned that you were troubled by the idea of Minister Farrakhan having the same kind of leadership position in this march as Martin Luther King did in earlier marches. You're troubled by the equation of the two men. Let me get you to elaborate on that.
Well, 1963, Martin Luther King has already made himself a world-famous figure by leading a substantially successful struggle of blacks in the south of the United States, blacks along with whites, I might add, to counter and overturn Jim Crow segregation. This is a great moment in American history, culminating in that 1963 gathering on the Mall. This is up there with Lincoln, it seems to me, in terms of a reinterpretation of the American political dispensation so as to include the descendants of slaves. Now here we are, not even 35 years later, and we gather again on the Mall, but now we gather in a race-exclusive and sex-exclusive way, and we gather, at least in part, behind a man who hated what Martin Luther King stood for, behind a man who descends intellectually and spiritually from a theology of racial separatism and racial hatred, however much that hatred may have itself been a reaction to white hatred of blacks, it is nevertheless racial hatred. We gather in a political context that's inconsistent with the ideas of integration in a kind of universal, common public citizenship. It seems to me that's too high a price to get our cultural trains to run on time.
Well, I think this is a kind of complicated algebra for a lot of people, weighing the equation between a march whose symbolic value is very appealing and a leader who represents divisiveness for a lot of people. What is that algebra for you? What's the equation? How much does it matter to you that Farrakhan is one of the leaders of a march that has some very powerful, potent value, symbolic value for you?
It matters a great deal, and I would not march. Mm-hmm. I won't go to this march behind Louis Farrakhan. As it happens, I will be on the Mall to observe because I'm writing something about it, but I won't be, as it were, marching.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is that we can't separate. When we go to Washington, when we gather in public on the Mall before the nation, the symbolic and spiritual dimension from the political message, those things are not separable. I think that Abe Rosenthal was right in that column he wrote in the New York Times. Even though he is himself often shrill on these issues, I believe he got it exactly right there. When you have a message like this, there is no separating the important spiritual principles and the ideals of self-help and even the accomplishments, which I think are there, the positive accomplishments of the Nation of Islam, from the fact that it embodies and reflects a doctrine that is inconsistent with liberal democracy in our country.
My guest is Glenn Lowry, author of the book One by One from the Inside Out, Essays and Reviews on Race and Responsibility in America. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about the Million Man March. My guest is writer and professor Glenn Lowry. What's your reaction to this being a male-only march?
Again, I think when it's a public march of such political importance, it's quite inappropriate that it be male-only. If we were gathering in the various black communities, in the church basements or the mosque back rooms, men gathering to talk with men about how we had to face our responsibilities, atone for our sins, and get our communities right, I would see no more problem with that than I see with, women gathering at Wellesley College, because that's an environment in which they can pursue their educations more effectively, they think. But when we gather on the Mall, hundreds of thousands strong, at least in part petitioning our government and making declarations before the entire nation, neither race nor gender exclusivity in that context is appropriate, in my view.
What's your understanding of the reason why women are asked to not attend this march?
Well, I think it derives in part from the philosophy that animates the Nation of Islam movement, in which women have, an important and valued, but I think it has to be said, secondary place, at least insofar as leadership is concerned. I think it also has to do with the fact that the issue of responsibility cuts more sharply and deeply for men. After all, there's no escaping the fact that when these children come into the world, they are cared for by their mothers. It's their fathers who are not there. And there is an indictment implicit in the social situation of black Americans today, which I think is unavoidably an indictment of men. So there is both the kind of hierarchical philosophy of the march organizers along gender lines, but also the fact that there is this blatant, glaring failure of men to have done what we ought to have done, both of which I think support this this male focus of the march.
And let me get your reaction to the march happening in Washington, D.C. What's the symbolic value of Washington, D.C. as the place for you?
Well, if this march was a march about reconstruction of the black community, it should be in Anacostia to the extent that it's in Washington, D.C. It should be on the east side of Detroit. It should be in Philadelphia, west side of Chicago, south central Los Angeles, Oakland, California, etc. It would be entirely possible to coordinate marches in all of those places in which black men confronted our responsibility to our respective communities. That the marches in Washington unequivocally marks it as a political event of national proportions in which a message is attempting to be sent to the nation, and in particular to a Republican Congress and to a president whom many African Americans feel is not sufficiently attentive to our interest. It is also on the site of the 1963 march. As such, if only one quarter of the numbers that Minister Farrakhan has called for show up, it will eclipse in its magnitude the March of 1963 and will unavoidably, inevitably, establish Minister Farrakhan as the premier figure within Black America. The fact that it takes place on the site of King's March is not incidental in that respect.
Do you think that African-American men today are in a unique predicament?
Yes, I do. I don't buy conspiracy theories. I don't like this easy kind of victimology. Black men have suffered, et cetera, et cetera. But I would think that what with the violence of street gangs, the drug addiction and all the rest, the unemployment, the sense of hopelessness and uselessness, the alienation from family as well as from community and nation that characterizes the condition of Black men, there's no escaping the fact that there's something very special, deeply sad and troubling that's going on in this quarter.
And when you look at what's going on, how much to you is about personal responsibility and how much of it is about larger social factors?
I think, I don't know how to cut the numbers here. It's 3-1, 4-1 personal responsibility. I know that that will upset people. And I don't mean to be taking a political position to say that there's nothing wrong in the society. We have plenty of jobs. The government has done everything right and everything that it should. I don't believe that's true. I think there's a place for social and political criticism. But I can't help but look at what happens with other groups in the society, even Black groups like the Haitian immigrants who have come to the country in relatively large numbers in recent years, and contrast that with the indigenous Black American community and see the very different responses that people are making. All of that says to me that there is a substantial scope for personal responsibility here. Whether or not you are a father to your children is a question of personal responsibility. Whether or not you brutalize and terrorize your neighbors is a question of personal responsibility.
The New Yorker magazine published a profile of you earlier this year that described a troubled period in your life. And yeah. I bring this up not to pass judgment, but in the hopes that you might want to use your personal experience to reflect on the larger issue. The article described a period in the 80s when you were using drugs, including crack. You fathered a son out of wedlock. And I was wondering if you emerged from that thinking that what you had was a unique personal problem or whether you saw it as a reflection of a larger social problem.
Well, I must say I looked at it as a personal problem. It was certainly not a unique one. And it is something that the fact that I have gone through it and come out the other side makes me especially sensitive to this call for atonement and responsibility and to the spiritual dimension of people facing up to what they have not done and determining and seeking the power to go in a different direction, because I know that can be done. I believe it's necessary and I know that it can be done. Drugs are out there in our society and we're all influenced by the culture in which we live. We're confronted with various temptations and so on. Here I was, a person of tremendous opportunity, all the blessings in the world, and nevertheless found myself caught up in something that was essentially nihilistic. So much easier, therefore, for me to understand that someone with few opportunities and little recourse might find themselves in a similar situation. So I have a great deal of sympathy, but I also have an understanding that the way one gets out of that situation is through determining to turn one's life around and then having the discipline and the power to confront these problems and deal with them.
Did you come out the other end with a different set of political principles or social beliefs?
I came out a good deal more humble. And I think ultimately, as I am now developing different political and social beliefs, the reason for that is that I'm no longer one of these people who thinks I know it all, thinks the issue is easy, or, you know, can with a kind of hubristic contempt dismiss people who are struggling in tough situations with the back of my hand. You know, I just have a little bit more of a step back and let's take a look at this situation and a good deal more sympathy for people. And I think that's affecting my politics, to be sure.
Well, Glenn Lowry, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me, Terry.
Glenn Lowry is the author of a collection of essays on race and responsibility called One by One, From the Inside Out. This is Fresh Air.